Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is writer and director Denny Tarot. Denny's new film, I Am Sid Stone, is available on demand today in the U.S. and in Canada. It's available on Amazon Prime, Google Play, Apple TV, and Out TV. It will also be available on physical DVD December 14th. That's 1 week from now. I Am Sid Stone is the story of Sid, a former A-list actor whose star has begun to tarnish. It doesn't shine quite as bright as it used to. And he finds himself taking smaller, safer roles rather than projects that would bring that shine back due to the subject matter and his attempt to hide his true self. This episode is sponsored by Raleigh Keegan. Raleigh is a Nashville-based singer, songwriter, country musician. His new album, Clocks Roll Forward, is available now. He just dropped his Christmas single, and he'll be singing the national anthem at the upcoming Bengals 49ers game. For all things Raleigh, head over to RaleighKeegan.com. You can download music, you can purchase merchandise, you can purchase physical CDs. You can also keep up to date on upcoming tour dates and releases. A big thank you to Raleigh for sponsoring the show. Now, grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host pup, and enjoy the show.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. Oh, there you are. Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
I can't see you.
I'm right here.
Hello. Is it Dennis or Denise?
Denny.
Denny? All right. It's very nice to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Oh, listen, I watched it today. I watched I Am Sid Stone today because I like to have it fresh in my mind.
Of course. All right.
And is the film based in Canada? I thought I heard him say Vancouver, but I don't really think it was mentioned again. Not that I noticed.
Yeah, it's set in Canada. I think the small town that it takes place in is kind of nondescript, but there are mentions of it's meant to be taking place.
So everybody, I am here with Denny. He is the writer and director of I Am Sid Stone, a movie that on the surface you would think is just the classic famous actor hiding in the closet, hiding his sexuality so he doesn't, lose followers or, it doesn't jeopardize his career. But it's honestly a little deeper than that. It's more of a journey for Sid to accept himself before other people can accept him, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a beautiful story, and there's parts in it that just absolutely, they get you. The interaction between him and his girlfriend, I was getting pissed off at her because I was like, she's making it all about herself. But an unfortunate fact about people when they come out is that it does affect their loved ones. It does affect family and friends. And many people in the community have said that, and they've said that it has affected not only them coming out, how they come out, how they process it, and how they help these other people process it. So,
it's like the ripple effect of not just your personal experience, but it affects everyone that's in your vicinity, right? That's close to you. Yeah. For sure, absolutely.
It just adds another. It adds another difficult step to what's already a difficult process.
Because you not only care about what others are going to think, but also it's like, how is this going to affect them personally, and it's something that I thought of. I for myself, when I came out, I wasn't so much afraid of what my mom would think, is I didn't want to hurt her, and I didn't want her to be worried about me, and it was more that, so it definitely is a another aspect of coming out is how will it affect other people and not just yourself.
Right. So, yeah. And that you have to think about, like you said, with your mom, not what's mom going to think? Is mom going to judge me? Is she going to accept me? What are mom's friends going to say to her? What are, you know, how is she going to be treated because she has a son or a daughter or and be, you know, it's something, unfortunately, everybody has to think about. And Sid has to think about it on this grand scale.
Yeah. You
know, he's already pushing that, and it's not Hollywood, but he's pushing that A-list actor on the decline, maybe heading, you know, past his prime, not getting the big things that he used to get. He's already dealing with that. And the fact, if this comes out, you know, he might as well say hello to straight to DVD, you know?
Yeah, because it's a sad reality that even though I think LGBT performers are like much more accepted in the industry today, it's not as damaging to a career as it used to be. It's definitely this kind of stigma, not stigma, but like, I think that the industry on the surface loves to say, hey, we're okay with gay and it doesn't matter what your sexuality is, it's all about your talent. At the end of the day, and this is something that, I mean, was the impetus for the whole series to begin with, was my fear as an actor when I was back in the day, when I was acting and in the industry actively, I was just afraid of the bias. I was afraid of someone saying, hey, it doesn't matter. But in the back of their minds thinking, well, yeah, like he's great, he's talented, but I just don't think he can pull it off because of his private life, right? So I was afraid of the unsaid things, the things that people think but don't say out loud. That's what I was afraid of. So, and I think that that's something that Sid also, you know, is battling with, especially when he's, you know, at the beginning, he's offered this script that you find out later has an LGBT theme to it. And so it's constantly in the back of his mind. It's this, but then again, his career too is something that he's built as a safety net for his whole life. Like he's running away from home, and so he's built this whole persona, right? So there is also comfort in that celebrity, which he doesn't want to lose. So
right, he's built this whole illusion of this cis white male, you know dude, and in reality he's crippled with this hiding and this secrecy. And it's not right when his agent calls in the beginning, you're kind of like, why is he throwing such a hissy fit about this? What I mean, it sounds like a deal, and then later on, if he did that, then the questions are gonna arise. And I got pissed at the interviewer too. I was like invested. You don't know. I was invested. I was like, how dare she?
I know. She just went straight for the gut. Yeah.
Yeah. And then his rep is like, ah, and I was like, get her, girl. But, and I don't want to say that, oh, that's maybe what Sid needed to open up, because I know that's what, you know, the story wants to say, but in reality, they don't need to be pushed. You know, it's not your place to push and to force to the open if they're not ready.
Absolutely. And that little kind of interaction with the interviewer, Jenny, was kind of a commentary on, I grew up in the, like, I mean, I would like to think that I grew up in the kind of onset of the whole Perez Hilton movement. And I remember he was very nasty to a lot of people in regards to their sexuality. He didn't, especially to as a gay man himself, it was kind of disheartening to see him go after people's sexualities. And he would draw, like, I don't know if you remember in the early days, he would draw like dicks on their faces on their pictures, like if he thought they were gay, but he wouldn't outright say it, he would imply it. And it's just a very nasty way to kind of force someone out of the closet if they're not ready. And there's that whole thing of like, well, just because you're a public person, does that mean that you have to reveal absolutely everything about your personal life? You know, it's still a question. My answer is no, you don't have to, but you're almost kind of forced to in a way. Just because of the fascination. Yeah.
And he was literally doing it for the clout. He was doing
absolutely.
He wasn't doing it for any, you know, altruistic, from the heart reasons, you know.
No, no.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let me make public people more visible to help people come out. Like, it's no, it was for his own good. Like, it was, yeah, it was very selfish.
And where is he now, honestly? Exactly. Come on.
He's still groveling for fame. He pops up once in a while in my Twitter feed. Very sad. My Twitter feed.
Yeah, but I mean, I just feel like there's this, well, on the one hand, there's people like Perez where they're like, well, I'm gay, so I'm going to make everybody who I think or know is gay, I'm going to make everybody be out so they can, you know, be like me. And then there's the other people that are just doing it, you know, interviewers or reporters for what it can get them. And it's not right.
No, I mean, neither version is right, because it's like you just said earlier, when someone, no one's going to be ready to come out until they're ready. You know what I mean? Like, you can lead a horse to water, but you can make them drink. It's that whole thing. It's you can be told a piece of advice 20 goddamn times, but until you really fully get there yourself and live the journey to get you there and be like, oh, okay, I get it, you won't be ready. Right. So yeah, in a way, it's like, I guess it was a story device where we needed to kind of get him to that point. But yeah, I think a few people brought up in early and on in my writing process, would a journalist today ever really able to ask that question? It's very pointed, and it's very like, it just implies, well, are you gay? You know, in a roundabout way. But yeah, I think that, you know, for the sake of the film, we had to go there quicker than I think, or if it would ever happen at all in real life. But yeah, it's a very interesting thing to ponder if that would happen today.
Right. If she had not said it, you know, how much longer would he have gone on hiding it and being miserable?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He had to walk that plank to kind of get to the other side. So yeah. Absolutely.
And I wanted to say, I loved the flashback scenes that were interspersed. It was just so, I don't know, it was just like this little break, I guess, from the story, but added to it as well. And it was just so, it was so cleverly done. And just like, I don't know if they were actual home movies or if you just filmed them to look that way, but they looked different first, you know, cinematography, they were filmed different. The lighting was different, and it was just very beautifully melded together, and it added such like this sweet little spice to it, to an already amazing story. So that was like, that touched me.
So cool to hear you say that. Oh, you know what? We want to know a little Easter egg. Those are actually me. Those are my home videos. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So the story of Sid, obviously, like I said, is previously based on my own fears. So it's already a personal story. And then those home videos came as an idea late in the process of editing. It was never planned to be that. But then I remembered I grew up an only child. So my parents, I was the center of attention, and they had a video camera. And so I've always had this box of 8 millimeter tapes that I would bring with me everywhere I moved. And then one day I was just looking at them and while we were editing, I'm like, oh my God, I wonder if that would work, you know, as a way to kind of glue the whole thing together. And it did. I mean, for me, I thought it worked, and it sold the, like, I think it worked that it was passable that I would sit as a young man. And I was able to find moments that kind of, went with the story, you know. It was a nice organic creating moment. Like, it just kind of came out of the ether, how most art does, and it was really a cool moment to kind of figure it all out.
Well, because when he's in the restaurant and he's talking to the other guy, I'm not sure, was he the director? Yeah.
Oh, in the restaurant. Oh, the dad, you mean?
Yeah. That was that.
Yeah.
So, and
the kid's father, yeah.
Yeah, from the movie. So yeah. when he's talking to him and he's talking about his dad, I think without the little flashbacks, it wouldn't have hit as hard.
Yeah.
It really added to it.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that's how you responded, because that's exactly what it was meant to incite. Yeah. So, yeah.
So I saw when I was looking, you see, I got the little background picture.
Yeah.
Is this a solo film or is there a...
That's a good question, because it's had quite a journey. So the poster that's behind you right now is actually the original short film. So it's, the short film is something that was made in 2015 or released in 2015. It was 11 minutes. And then so how this whole new project came to be was that short film had much more success than we ever anticipated it having. It went to over 30 film festivals worldwide. It got physical distribution in the UK. And then when we put it online, it reached 1 million views at the collective places it was online. And so we started thinking, well, people care about the story, and you would read the comments and people wanted to know what was happening with Sid now. And they wanted a happier ending because the short finishes on a kind of rather somber note. And so that's how this whole project germinated, was from that, that short film. And so then this film, and the reason why it's all those kind of 8mm interstitials kind of glue the whole thing together, is that this was initially shot as a web series.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was shot as a 6-episode web series and actually came out in Canada on OutTV, premiered on television. So it's had this weird life. It was a web series, it was a TV series, and now it's fully formed as a film. And it was the perfect length. It was 1 hour and 20 minutes. So it's, you know, a little shorter than usual, but still feature length. And so yeah, it's had quite a life.
That's crazy. Well, listen, Letterkenny put it out on YouTube, so.
Absolutely. So many crazy success stories from a web series, even Insecure on HBO, that started out as a web series as well. So it's kind of a cool, like, kind of springboarding place for like creators. So it's really cool.
Absolutely. I mean, minute short film hits 30 festivals. It's streamed 1 million times. I mean, that's just testament to the story, honestly.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you. I mean, again, I made shorts before and they never hit that way. And this was the first story that was really personal to me. So it really kind of added credence to that whole saying of write what you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'd heard that saying before, but then I was like, oh, maybe people kind of reacting to this because we love to watch a good old popcorn movie, but for me, when I watch a good indie film that's dark and I connect with it and I see a moment or a line of dialogue and think to myself, oh shit, like I've been there before, someone's looked at me that way or said that to me, that's when it hits me. So I think obviously that's what happened with the short, because to this day, even the guy on the poster, Garrett, or myself, we still get emails about the original short or like DMs on social media. It's crazy. It's still living a life after all these years. So it's the gift that keeps on giving. Sorry, say that again.
Do I have the wrong guy?
so funny story too. That's the original Sid Stone, but that's now Garrett, who his real name is Garrett. He is now the producer of this series. So we both, since the short film, we started out as actors, and that was one of my first short films that I first stepped behind the camera. And now we both are behind the camera. And so he, obviously we recast with Travis Nelson, who was brilliant in the film. And that's another kind of thing.
It's gone.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
I was all part of the history. But I was going to, I wanted to ask you, I have to keep my voice down because my son's over there.
Of course.
The episode or the moment in the hotel.
Yes. You want me to speak to those? I had never directed, as far as like the short film had a bit of an intimate scene, but it wasn't anything crazy. So I was intimidated, of course, leading up to it. But I think the big important thing is, and you'll hear this with any like intimate scenes, we had something that's relatively new in the industry. We had an intimacy coordinator. So it's someone who's like, think of it as a stunt coordinator, but mm-hmm. for sex scenes. And it was very interesting because then they're just there to kind of ease the actors and just talk. And if the actors have any concerns, they can address them to them. And we all deal with it together collectively. So nice. It was a really cool tool to have on set. But again, Travis and Ben, the two leads, we've had, you know, discussions beforehand about what they were comfortable with. And yeah, it was just it wasn't weird or anything. It felt very natural. And of course we clear all the non-essential people on the set, and it's just a very intimate setting. And we just kind of do what we need to do to make that story authentic, that moment authentic. Because if that didn't sell, then none of it would sell, right? We need to feel that connection, right? So yeah, it was a very interesting.
It was very believable.
Oh, great. Very yeah. It's a testament to their chemistry too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's so funny you said intimacy coordinator.
Mm.
Right? So I'm imagining, you know, with a stunt coordinator where they're like, they step in and they're like, okay, you're going to kick and you're going to punch. So the intimacy coordinator is like, okay, well, you're going to go down.
Yeah. It literally is that kind of, I'm sure you've heard it described before, like sex scenes are usually not that sexy. Like it's very, not robotic, but it's like, it's a means to an end. Like you have to kind of get them done, and it's done in a professional setting, and there's cameras and you're like right near your face. Like it's not sexy, you know, when you're there,
right.
It looks sexy. That's the whole point. Our job is to make it look sexy.
Right.
So yeah, it's a very interesting process.
Yeah, I was watching it at work and I had to pause for a little bit. I was like, oh, let me
yeah.
Wait.
I'm just gonna put this on pause for a second.
But no, it was very believable, and it's you're right. I mean, the bright lights, it's cold usually, you know, you've got a sock or something. And maybe, I don't know. I wasn't there.
No, in this case you did, yeah.
Yeah, in the end, it's just like very believable. And
right.
I do want to ask you, I want to touch on this because this is something that we're doing for another show. We're having a conversation about it. I've heard that in mainstream movies, you know, major motion pictures and, you know, from studios,
right.
There's a difference in sex scenes and intimacy, sex scenes basically. And for me, I see a lot of indie films and y'all aren't holding back. So
no.
Do you feel like, are they being safe? Do you think the major studios and you guys are just more brave and it, you know, have you noticed?
No. Yeah. I personally haven't noticed it because I tend to gravitate more towards indies anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's a safety thing. I know that, you know, obviously most of those studio films are meant to be for mass consumption. And so you want to make them as palatable as possible. And unfortunately, especially in North America, it's this weird thing because in the UK and in Europe, like sex in movies is like, whatever, you know, like, but in North America, it's still kind of still a taboo thing. So I think, yeah. And I just think that in indies, you have less of a big corporate, like money, you know, hungry entity behind it. So they are more than willing to risk, you know, more. And I think that's why people go to indies, because they do take those risks, right? So a big inspiration for this film was, visually at least, was Shame. I don't know if you've seen Steve McQueen's Shame, but it's Michael Fassbender and it's all about sex addiction, but it's the way that it was shot. It's very like, dark bluish grayish colors, but very sumptuously shot. I even sought out the same lenses that they shot that film on, so that's what we shot our show on, or our film. So yeah, it's yeah, all that to say, I think you're right. I think it is a thing that's kind of declining in big studio filmmaking, but it'll never go away in indies, because indies always explore the darker subjects, and sexuality and sex is part of human nature, right? And if we're exploring characters, it's inevitable,
right? Yeah. And I think independent films have a little more freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And And a lot of times, independent filmmakers, and you might find this as well, they say that they give up the security of a bigger production company and gain that freedom.
100%. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, in Canada, the program that specifically we got the funding from to make this project, they literally just hand the money over to you and you just get to make your project. There's no notes. There's no, it's very, the freedom is like up the roof. So that was a luxury that I'm sure that on my next projects, I won't have as much of, because we're already looking for more money on a grander scale. And with more money comes more hands in the pot, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, so we were very lucky on this. And we could have, you know, we could have pushed the sexuality even more. Like, it's very tame in comparison to a lot of indies where, you know, it wasn't gratuitous. It wasn't, you know, so it was because we were shooting it with in mind that it would be a web series that we would want to get as much appeal or viewership as possible. So we didn't push the envelope on that. And I didn't feel it was important either, because the actual sex itself wasn't important. It was the intimacy that was important.
Right. It was the connection rather than lewd, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was still hot.
Thank you. I will take it, because it was my first sex scene.
I said, "Who?"
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, let me take a break.
And it's so great because Sid is just so torn. He's just so awkward about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially like you have to consider that, you know, you find out later on that it's not exactly his first sexual experience, but he hasn't been with a ton of guys either, right? So it's
right.
That's the whole point of it. Part of his struggles is internal. It's like, I shouldn't be doing this, but it feels right in a way too. So,
right.
That's why you shouldn't deny. Yeah, it's all part of his growth. It's
right.
Don't deny who you really are. Right.
Right. And when he has a conversation, and I'm sorry, I can't think of her name, with his girlfriend.
Oh, Rachel. Yeah.
Rachel.
Yeah.
When he has a conversation with Rachel, and after the letter or the note is dropped off, and so I let him come in, and she's like, "What do you mean you let him come in?" And he's like, "You know what I mean." And I'm like, and then she's like instantly like freaking out. And I'm like, well, if he said it like that, obviously you guys have had a conversation. I got really invested. You don't even know, but it's like, so obviously he had not, I guess, dropped clues, or he hadn't been so far in the closet as, you know, we might have thought.
Mm-hmm.
If they had been together for like 3 years.
Yeah. It's possibly come up, or it's like, you know what I mean? I think it's what I was trying to make come across with that scene, was that she's not an idiot, and she's obviously, it's not so much a discussion they've had. It's probably like, if you're not an idiot, you would have seen the signs. You know what I mean? Right. Like it's and I think it's her denying it to himself, and that's why later on he's like, "Well, I got you your first gig, and it's because of that." And I somehow thought we had an agreement, but it was never talked about. You know what I mean? So I think both of them are guilty of just not talking about the elephant in the room. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, and just keeping the illusion up.
Right. Her wanting them to be in that kind of relationship so bad that she's just ignoring things.
Exactly. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, he came out with that, "I got you that audition," and I said, "Oh, no.
I know. I know. Yeah, I know. It's kind of painful to hear.
But you can also get it. You're like, okay, he's hurt, so he's striking out.
100%.
Yeah, he's scared and he's hurt and he's striking out real quick.
Let me just say the thing that'll hurt you the most. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, hopefully hasten your departure, because you're already on your way out the door.
Yeah. And then exactly.
More with you.
Yeah.
He delivered that line and it was so good that I actually went, "Ooh." And she said, "If you follow me, I'll scream." And I was like, "Ooh."
She's not messing around. Yeah, no, she's done.
She's
yeah,
like, "You, I'm out." Yeah,
I'm checking out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But oh God, I'm telling you, it was so good. I got so invested in like all these little things, like when he sat down at the table with Matt.
Oh yeah, at the like just before Matt leaves, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh God, this is so painfully awkward, because Matt was just like, he just closes his laptop like.
What do you want?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
What? Yeah, he's yeah. already over it.
And I don't know if we're giving a bunch of stuff away, but it's just you and me talking. It's fine.
Yeah.
When things start to come out, and it does that nice little montage of Rachel, of Matt, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like they kind of are getting it now. They're getting they're getting his. Why he was like not ready to do that and why he
asked. Well, yeah, and it's so great that you literally touched on that earlier, where it was like it doesn't just affect you, it affects everyone, right? So that was the whole point of that little montage, was saying like, you know, the journey is not just yours, it's everyone that you meet on that journey. And that's why it was also important for me. Well, again, I don't want to give it away, but like, that, you know, it's not so much of a Hollywood ending. It's more like it's an optimistic ending. It's saying that, you know what, Sid's on his way. He's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But it's not like a, you know, perfectly right. tied bow tie and like right off into the sunset. You know, it's like, I'm at the beginning of my healing is what it is.
Right.
You know, so he's not,
He's not sitting there and this beautiful rainbow just goes,
yeah, I'm here and I'm queer. Yeah. Yeah, it's not quite that yet.
We won't talk too much about that, but that part you're talking about, it took me back for a second, because the barista looks a lot like the main character. And I did
Oh, really?
And I went, wait a minute. So I rewound it to see if I had missed anything. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, that's him. Okay. Because I was like, wait a minute. Did Sid just all of a sudden start working at Starbucks? What happened?
Okay. But, and then you saw the reveal of, yeah. Okay.
So I was like, that's awesome. And I was like, no, wait, it's not him. Okay. But that little exchange is so cool too.
Yeah.
Cause you could kind of tell. And I pre-record so I can edit out if we talk about anything too.
Of course,
too.
Yeah.
That little exchange was so cool, because I felt like Sid was going to be like, oh, God.
Yeah.
No, he saw the interview. Fuck. But
yeah.
Instead, it was just like, you know, that was really cool what you did, blah, 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 blah. And he was like happy and like pleased, kind of, rather than dread of, oh, God, not another person asking me. Oh, I hear you're gay, you know?
Right, so, right.
It was just really cute.
It's so funny, because initially in earlier drafts of the script, it was a very much more like saccharine ending, where Matt and Sid ended up together and they watched the interview together and everything was just perfectly fine. But I just thought, you know, there's so many love stories where people like end up falling in love with the person that they court during the film, and I just thought it doesn't always end up like that in movies, right? Or in real life, sometimes you'll live something intense with someone and you'll just part ways. You learn what you need to learn from that person, and that's it. And I thought that was much more, I guess there's a beauty in that, and it's more realistic in line with real life. So that's why when I wrote that scene as it is in the film, was the first draft of that scene. Like, I wrote that scene and I never changed it, because I just loved how simple it was. And it kind of just told you everything you needed to know, that he was, you know, he was on his way to healing. And it was just a very subtle, you know, and there's a bit of flirting between the two, but it's not over the top. It's just, it was just a nice little bookend to the whole thing. And I'm glad that you responded to it, because I was very proud of that ending.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, Sid's not okay, but he's gonna be. He's on the road to okay.
Yeah.
Because isn't that how it is, though? Is nobody nobody's life straightens out in 120 minutes.
No, at all. No. And even when you hit your, like, you know, that moment where you're, you learn your lesson, it's like, it's not like the day after your whole life is like, well, I've figured that out, so let's live the rest of our lives perfectly. Like, no, you take that lesson, you take it in and you move on and you approach things with that new knowledge, right? It's not, it doesn't make you a perfect being right away.
Right.
Well, you never achieve perfection, but yeah, you know what I mean?
No, nobody's ever instantly better.
No.
There's magic, you know, as much as we believe that, you know, we could wave a wand. It's not how life is.
Right, exactly. So, but, no, it's definitely as much as like film and TV is a vehicle to tell stories and to reflect life, like, well, to distract us. It's a lot of people go to the movies they go to the big blockbusters to forget their problems, right? But for me, I gravitate much more towards stories that kind of, again, reflect problems or situations that I've been in. Or alternatively, why I love horror specifically is that you can watch something in the comfort of your home and explore those dark recesses of your mind, but in the comfort of your own home. Like at the end of the film, you're still safe, you know? So that's what I love about film. But in my own projects, I strive to be as realistic as possible while still telling an enjoyable story, right? I don't want people to be like, oh God, this is insufferable. But I want it to be real, like as much as close to real as possible. So.
Right. Well, as a writer, you need to relate to what you're writing so that because if you're just writing it and you're phoning it in, you know, you're like, Bob, Susie does that. There you go. Your audience is going to be like, I don't care what Bob and Susie are doing. This is dumb. Yeah. But if you're, I was going to write, but we're, you know, when you're down into it and you're going, or even if you have to like take yourself back a second and go, oh, that one hit a little hard. Then you know
there's hitting.
Your audience is going to go, oh God, that hit hard.
So, yeah. No, that's why as a writer, you are kind of a barometer for, you know, how, like, because at the end of the day, I'm a human being and I have feelings and emotions. So if I write something and I react to it, the chances are someone else is going to, right? So that's why we use ourselves as a barometer of, like, it's empathy and empathy for the characters we write for, right? Because you don't always agree with what people do, but you have to make them do those things, even though you don't want them to be doing them. It's such a weird thing to do, but yeah, it's so fun.
Get out of the way. There we go. It's with the Black Friday and all that, all these little notifications
deals pop up.
Every once in a while I go, ooh, no, but immerse yourself as much into the story as you can, which is funny you said horror, because that's kind of hard to do, because you don't want to much into the, you know, decapitation or, you know, things like
that.
But with a drama, you know,
very easy to put yourself there. Yeah.
Right. You want to have trauma, you know, if your parents, you know, were horrible to you and you start writing about that, for you, it can also be cathartic, but it's going to touch on those little nerves in the audience who had shitty parents too, you know?
Oh yeah. Cause
And now your audience has empathy for your character, even if maybe the nicest person, or, you know, maybe they're very flawed, they're still going to be going, oh, we're alive.
yeah. I mean, and that's ultimately the sign of good writing and good characters, is that no matter how bad your character is too, like how bad their actions are, if you make them a full person, you're going to make the audience doesn't have to agree with what they do, but as long as they can see why they do what they do.
Right.
So and that's the core of empathy. It's like, well, okay, I don't agree with what they're doing, but I see why they're doing it, because this happened to them. This is why they're dealing with the situation in this way. So yeah, I mean, I think I always go back with a fine tooth comb on my scripts, and I just make sure that all the actions are warranted, and would this person really do that if this was done to them? Like, is this who this person is? And so Yeah, like this project, it was in the writing phase for probably a good 2 years before we went to camera. So wow. it wasn't just something that I wrote, you know, and
then
over time. Yeah.
I like that concept of forced empathy. And also, I'm sorry, I'm trying to get my shoe on. Also, what I was going to say, oh, you said, God damn it. Let me get my shoe on. Oh, there you go.
Do your thing.
Understanding why the character does something that they do. Sid seems so, not gentle, that's not the word I want, but like laid back, but this underlying tension because of the secrecy. That when he throws the soccer ball at the craft services table, you're like, oh.
Whoa, yeah.
Because this whole time, with the exception of maybe, you know, like slamming his fist on the door or the, you know, the interview with Rachel, where the voices got heated and things like that. But that was, to me, it was kind of like, he's cracking, this
is. It's this the kettle boiling over, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, here it comes.
Watch out. Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what that was meant to symbolize. So it was, Sid's a very like kind of, well, the analogy of a kettle boiling over is great, because throughout the whole film, he is kind of just boiling beneath the surface, right? That secret is there. And through events, it kind of just, you know, spirals right up and, you know, the cap pops off.
Yeah. And it's sudden. And it's unexpected, and in a small way compares to, you said you liked horror, you know, 28 Days Later, where, what's his face? Anyways, he's walking in his hospital gown. It's so quiet. And that freaking alarm goes off. And that's like this,
it just comes out of nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah. This like notification that shit's about to get real.
Yes.
Same thing with Sid. It's like, okay. Yeah, you're right. That pot just boiled over, and now it's going to be a mess. Or, you know, he's going to have to really start facing this stuff and start dealing with it.
Yeah, well, in his case, it's both. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, isn't it in real life when you keep something, like say you're pissed off at your partner or whomever, and you keep it inside a whole freaking day long to where you just, you know, you lose your temper. But then after after you've just like exploded or lost your temper or, you know, slammed the door or whatever, then you start to like come back down. You start to calm to where you can actually.
You need that release first.
Right.
And then you start to kind of rationalize the situation a bit more and be a bit more, rational about the situation. So, I think we need those explosion moments, because then it kind of, okay, that tantrum's done with. Now let me kind of, what is really the situation about? And then you can kind of start analyzing it on a more, you know, rational level.
Yeah. So I think he needed it to explode, like you said. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was needed.
Yeah. I wanted to go back. You were saying you didn't want to give Sid and Matt the happy ending.
Right.
Which is fine. In that vein of thought, I wanted to tell you, and this again could just be between you and me, there's a really, as you'll appreciate this as an independent filmmaker, there is an film, it's called My Fiona. Kelly Walker wrote and directed it. It's a queer film. And
let me write this down.
Yeah, it's all small letters, My Fiona. And it's on demand, it's available on demand. But it's a long, you made me think of that when you were saying that you didn't want to necessarily have that, you know, happy slappy, you know, they live happily ever after kind of ending.
Right. Because that kind of, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Say no more. I'm already in. Yeah.
Check it out. Cool. But going back to Sid. So are we done with his journey?
Well, since the project did germinate first as a web series, when we were in post-production last summer, I actually wrote another season of it. So technically, like, if we wanted to make another movie, it's written. Okay. It would need some rewrites, but it's there. And the journey this time would be him returning to his hometown and facing his father.
Yes.
Face to face. And there's a whole whack of baggage to unload there. So it's yeah, I mean, to whether or not that'll actually happen. Yeah, it's weird how things, you know, like last year I was so gung-ho about it. And now that the project, because I wrote that before the show, like the project even came out, the first, you know, first iteration of it. Now I've moved on to other projects. And so it would take a lot for my interest to be sucked back into it. But if someone came and knocked on my door tomorrow and said, here's the funding to do it, I would do it in a heartbeat. Because right. I love the character of Sid. I've been with the character for 5 years. And I love Travis. Him and I grew so close, just again with having similar experiences of being gay in the film industry, and just everything that we poured from ourselves into this. We had a lot of really deep conversations on set prior to filming and on during production. So yeah, I would jump at the chance again. It's something that now I feel comfortable in his world. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I can, like, again, it's that age old thing. I can know him like the back of my hand, so I could interpret that character for years to come if need be, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I love him.
I feel like Sid would do well dealing with, now he's getting scripts only for, you know, gay characters. Mm-hmm. And because then you can bring into the whole, we can still play other parts. We love.
Yeah, I've been. Yeah.
We love and appreciate the fact that you are, you know, the inclusivity, and that you're letting us portray ourselves without being the homosexual man that gets stabbed in an alley, you know.
Right. Or the stereotypical gay man, which, yeah, also happens a lot. Yeah.
Right. Like Nathan Lane in The Birdcage.
Yeah, like that's extreme, you know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, like not all homosexuals, not all gay men are drag queens, not all drag queens are gay, you know.
We come in all shapes and sizes, and right.
The inclusivity. But
yeah,
I feel like Sid could be like, god damn, ever since I came out, you know, I get nothing but, you know.
Would be another interesting journey to explore, right. Because yeah, that is like, okay, so what happens now that he's out, you know what I mean?
Right, you know. It's a script for like Tu Wong Fu Too, you know.
It's like, okay, yeah, we get it. You guys know I'm gay, like,
right?
Yeah,
right. So you said you're working on a project now. Can you talk about it?
Absolutely, yeah. So I have a few things in the works, but the thing that's furthest along is we started attaching cast to it. Actually, okay. it's called Boy Wonder. And the log line, essentially, which I'm still working on, is about a young child star, from the early 2000s that goes missing all of a sudden. And so now in the present day, a journalist meets someone in AA, after he's recently released from rehab, and starts to suspect that this guy he's met is this missing kid, because that missing kid's never been found and kind of just disappeared off the map. So all that to say, it's about the sexual abuse of young men in the film industry.
Oh, wow.
That's an exploration of that. Yeah. So it's obviously, thank God, it's not something that's ever happened to me, but I've just been so angry watching all of these docs come out about, you know, the Michael Jackson doc, and I was a huge Michael Jackson fan. But ever since seeing that doc, I just can't listen to his music. It just kind of, I just immediately think of that, right? And the whole project came as a response to, like, mm-hmm. these things coming out to light and people still, like, kind of glazing over it. Like, they're watching it and they're acknowledging that it happened, but it doesn't stop them from enjoying things. And to, again, to each his own, but to an extent, it's like, okay, well, are we just gonna forget that happens, you know? So that's what this film kind of addresses.
I mean, you have what's his name, Corey Feldman has spoken mm-hmm. out, Jonathan yeah. has spoken out about it,
Woody Allen's daughter. Yeah
Well, I mean, we are not in any way, shape, or form diminishing my son handed me a marshmallow, I'm sorry, I'm playing with it. We're not diminishing or devaluing what has happened to young girls and young women, but we'd like to shine a light on the fact, and I'm a mother of boys, so we would love to shine a light on the fact that this happens no matter what your gender.
Y'all, 100%, and it's insane, especially the Corey Feldman thing. I read his bio and I did so much research for the film, and yeah, it's sad that it's a sad reality that especially in the film industry, it is so prevalent. It's so prevalent, and a big thing is that it especially in Hollywood, because money runs rampant, right? It's an industry built on money. Is that a lot of the times the victims are silenced with money or with NDAs, and it all gets hidden, right? It all gets buried. Mm-hmm. So that's something that can happen in Hollywood because of the already like the kind of dog eat dog atmosphere. It keeps getting buried. So this is kind of like a redemption tale for that subset of Hollywood, like child actors, I guess.
Right, and for a lot of these kids, this is their dream. This is what they want more than anything in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once you know someone in a position of authority that can, or you think they can, give you that dream, but they tell you you need to do something disgusting or.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's especially to one that makes me so angry is everything that Bryan Singer's done to his victims, because even though this was never proven, but Brad Renfro had such a promising career, and I think he was 16 or 15 when he worked with him on Apt Pupil with Bryan Singer. And yeah, like the things that I've read in my research, because I went deep, like below what most like kind of surface articles would talk about. And yeah, he would refer to Brad Renfro as his boyfriend at parties and stuff, and the kid was still underage. And you know, ultimately, Brad Renfro died of a drug overdose when he was 22, right? So,
and what was he numbing? You know, what was he numbing?
Exactly. That's the thing. It's because you'll say that to someone like, "Well, none of that was ever proven." It's like, well, if you connect the dots, like everything's there. You know, it's a pattern. It's people that are abused numb and mask the pain with substance abuse. So yeah, it's a sad reality.
What, didn't he die of a drug overdose as well? Corey Haim?
Who?
Corey Haim?
Corey Haim did, yes. Yeah, and I mean, that's it with it's Corey Feldman's, you know, statement that he was raped when he was like 14, I think, younger than 11, I think. So yeah, it's that whole thing. Anyway, it kept me, this is something that I started writing, it's almost 2 years in the making now, but it's endlessly fascinating. It's incredibly sad, but it's endlessly fascinating because it's all about human behavior. And it's not the abuser side that's interesting. Unfortunately, it's the victim side, because it just has so many effects on people. And again, maybe it comes from being an actor, but I just love exploring just the deepest recesses of human behavior and how we react to things. And it's been an interesting project to develop, and I'm very excited, despite the subject matter, to make the film, because I feel like it can make a difference and it could start conversations that need to be had, you know. Ultimately why we make anything of artistic value is to kind of get a reaction and get people to talk about stuff.
Spark a conversation.
Exactly.
And the timing is ripe too. I just heard on the radio this morning that they're starting to pick the jury for that what's her name, Maxwell lady, Epstein's girlfriend.
Ghislaine Maxwell. Yeah, she's she's gonna have an interesting time in court, because the odds are very stacked against her. She's had a lot of people. Yeah. So we'll see, but again, another person with money, right? So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, so you said a cast is attached, so you'll start filming what, next year?
The hope is yes. Like, we don't have our funding in place, but the way it works in Canada, especially, is we try to attach cast first, and then we go to the funding entity and be like, okay, well, look, we've attracted this type of cast, and I'm meeting with the DOP next week. Who shot some incredible stuff. I'm very excited about him. We'll apply for our funding in March. So hopefully, if all goes well, by this time next year, we're shooting. And it's all set and shot in Toronto. So hopefully all goes well.
I can see like you just showing up and you're like, I mean, it's a basic name drop, right? When you're going to get your funding, mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, you know, so-and-so is going to be DOP. You might've heard of
yeah. yeah, yeah. No, it's totally, it is. Because it's like, everyone wants what other people have, right? That they see that these people are like, well, the material's obviously attracted this talent, then it must be of worth, right? Because
right.
it's funny, a lot of the times, these funding entities don't have time to read a full script, which is funny because they're giving, you know, a lot of money. But yeah, it's, you're right. It is a name drop game, and it is a resume game, as they say. But then again, it's a catch 22. It's like, how can you get the resume if you can't get the funding to make the stuff, to get it on the resume, you know? So it's, yeah, it's an interesting process, but you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing else I'd rather do. I love this so much, and I eat, sleep, and breathe it, and I think about it constantly, and it's just it literally gives me a reason to be alive.
Right.
I love it. Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm, as much as I loved I Am Sid Stone, I know that I'm going to be 1,000% invested in this new project, because like I said, I'm a mom of boys, so this hits
immediately. Yeah.
Immediately.
No, and that's the thing. It's like it doesn't. I honestly don't think, like, I'm not a parent myself, but I think if I was, it wouldn't matter what gender they were. Any threat is a threat, right? It's like it'll come at you from any angle, and that's why there's such a misconception about the abuse of boys, because they think, oh well, boys can't be abused. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? You know. But then again, that with the Catholic Church, that's another example of young men being abused and something, you know, the stories being repressed. You know, I just rewatched Spotlight again, and it made me so angry. but it's such a great film. Yeah, so it's definitely something that I'm sure, as a mother of two boys, you'll be able to kind of identify with the fears of that.
Absolutely.
Quote unquote happening. So.
That's awesome. Do you find, I know we're running close on time, I'm not sure what time it is. Do you find that Canada is more supportive of independent filmmakers? Because you mentioned funding.
Yeah, it's a different model, right? I think it's, I think the government is definitely like tax money, because it all comes from that. It's like it's funding of the arts through tax money.
Right.
I think in that sense, they are. It's the only downside to Canada that there are a lot less independent studios like there are in the US, where you can literally just take a script to them. And then, I mean, it's harder to get seen by them because they probably get inundated with projects, but they will just cut you a check. If they believe in you, they'll be like, here's $5 million, go make your movie, right? Versus here, we have to first get through the hurdle of getting, you know, government funding, and then that funding will trigger other smaller kind of funding entities, which again, a lot of times are tax funded. And so it's kind of like a piece, it's like funding by piecemeal, like you have to kind of get little pieces here and there and build the budget of your film. You know, I when I was an actor, I remember there was a film that I did with Corey Monteith that had 11 different funding sources.
Wow.
And the budget was only 1.7 million. So imagine 11, you know, 11 different sources for 1.7 million. So it's not, because 1.7 is not a lot, really, when you think of the grand scheme of a movie. It's not right. A lot of money.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a journey in Canada for sure to get funding for a film.
Did you just say Corey Monteith?
Monteith?
Yes. Glee?
Yeah, I did. So Corey and I did a film called All the Wrong Reasons. And we played, we were basically best friends. It was in a big box store, kind of like Walmart. And he was the manager of the store and I was the assistant manager. And yeah, it was the next to last project. So he did our film and then he did another film after called Mechanic, and that he passed away basically 8 months after we wrapped, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, it was what a trip that was, that whole thing. Because when we worked with him, he was such a sweetheart and so kind and so professional. And he was, every weekend, he was shooting, or no, they were doing promo for, he season 4, which was about to start shooting, but they were taking all the stills and stuff like that. So he would fly back to LA every weekend and come back and not complain, and was on time and knew his lines, and so it was just, it was really sad. Like, I think it's funny enough, a kind of impetus, because I wrote and directed Sid Stone the year after, and so in the script too, he's just alone in his hotel room a lot, and he's isolated, and that's something that him and I talked about, like, you know. And ultimately he unfortunately passed away by himself in his hotel room, and yet he was admired by these people all over the world. Like, so there was a deep sadness to the whole situation, and that's, I think, where a lot of my fascination with fame came from, because mm-hmm. I got a brush with it, and I got to see like the real person behind, you know, he was at the height of Glee fame at that point, right? So it was a very trippy thing to see up close, because he was just like you and me, like he's regular dude from Vancouver, you know, and was so happy doing what he did. He was so excited about all of it, which, you know, a lot of people in his position in, you know, season 4 would become jaded, but he was still so like excited about the whole thing. So
yeah, I think it's hard for us to understand when someone is so beloved and so loved and so admired, because, you know, of a character they portray, or even just as an actual human being, that it doesn't make sense to us that they could be unhappy, or they could depressed.
Robin Williams fucked me up. But then again, if you really think about it, it made sense, because all the stories you would hear, like anecdotal stories, were that when he wasn't on set or like being interviewed, like he was a very like folded upon himself person, and would avoid eye contact, and just shy. And so you kind of see where that loud like impression, all the voices that he had inside of him, it was all masking. But yeah, so ultimately it's I think that sadness is always going to be there. It seems to be, it's so funny, there's this thing with comedians, I think, too, where there's just like, the funniest people seem to be the most depressed. It's so, I don't know, I
wonder if people that are that on, you know, they're that outgoing with the persona, I feel like when they're at home with their shoes off, they're deep inside their own head. You know, maybe they're over, you know, it's hard to say. Yeah, but that wrecked me. But Heath Ledger, same thing.
Yeah. You know? And again, I think there is something to be said about it. I think there's something about the creative brain specifically that, I know I have a hard time shutting my brain off. In social settings, I'm always thinking about projects. I'm always thinking creatively. So sometimes it is hard for me to socialize, because I'm just always, So I think that's the reason why a lot of substance abuse happens in like writers, actors, performers, things like that, because they need to numb that out. As cliche as that is now, because it's been interpreted in film as well, too.
But if it's based in truth, I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's a cliche because it's true, right? So
just try to quiet all of that noise that's going on.
Yeah, the proverbial, you know, creative voices. It's definitely a thing.
Man. Well, we got down in the dumps really quick, didn't we?
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyways. So I'm really excited about this new, you're calling it Boy Wonder, which is awesome. I Am Sid Stone, available in Canada on December 7th, iTunes for purchase and rental, and video on here in the US, everywhere, Amazon.
All the Xbox, all those things, you know. Google awesome. Plus,
And then DVDs in stores on the 14th.
On the 14th, yeah.
Alrighty. Is there a website that people can head over to and get all information on Sid?
You can find some information on the Dark Star Pictures website, because they are the American distributor. Okay. But there's no official website or anything like that. We have an Instagram. Okay. But other than that, no.
Is it I am Sydney on Insta?
Yes. Yes, it is.
All righty. And people can find you on social media? On Twitter, yep. I heard?
Twitter, Instagram, yep. Twitter is DENTHERI.
Okay.
And then my Den Terry, and then my Instagram is my whole name, Denny Terrio.
Okay. Nice. All righty. Yeah. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thank you for digging deep in the show and caring about the characters and stuff. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about it on that level.
I really loved it, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
And I really get into like romantic-y type, because I'm like you, I like the thrillers, I like the horror.
Yeah.
But this was not that. This was not your, you know, run-of-the-mill boy meets boy.
Right. You know? There's a lot more to it. Yeah.
It was a lot of meat, very little fluff.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Oh, well, thank you. I loved hearing that.
I'm going to go find you on Twitter and follow you real quick.
All right. Sounds good. I'll refollow you.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, you have.
Oh, it's all good. All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.